Thank you, Dr. Allen. I think all of you know the United States, we have to regulate things. There's a good reason why there was consideration about need for regulation of application of byproduct gypsum, and I'll help you understand that. I have my ARS co-authors because they're part of the data that basis for everything that we're doing. We also cooperated with Warren Dix Group and the EPRI people in terms of looking at their data. This, I try to say, what perspective about gypsum use? I think we all know gypsum's been long used, but from our, you know, a regulatory point of view, FEG gypsum is a unique or new source. It's an industrial byproduct. States regulate byproducts, non-hazardous byproducts. It's important to say that because if it were hazardous, EPA would have a separate regulation program. Because EPA is wanting to promote beneficial use and recycling rather than putting in landfills or massive storage piles where we know these things are stored until they're used, they're trying to determine whether all coal combustion products are hazardous or not, and I don't think they've announced the final decision about any of them, including gypsum. So the agricultural community and the commercial users have been sponsoring research to clarify what the good that happens, but also the bad that could potentially happen. And because of research conducted in the last 20 years, a lot of it at the Beckley, West Virginia location with ARS people, they found that a lot of the mixed materials where fly ash was mixed into the gypsum had so many contaminants that it was arguable whether it was a good practice. So the industry decided that we don't need that pain. We're gonna make gypsum that is produced after the fly ash has been removed. And then with forced oxidation, we have sulfate rather than sulfite. We don't have the adverse effect of adding sulfite. Those very negative things were shown in the pre-2000 literature. So again, USDA is cooperating with EPA and with the other players in the gypsum market to decide what advice should be given to the state regulatory people about introducing it as a beneficial use product. Beneficial use designation is a key thing. So when we do this risk assessment, we look at all the possible pathways. This is the list of the 503 biosolids rule pathways. You have food for humans, eating soil by children, livestock, either eating soil or eating crops, and then you have crops, earthworms, things that eat earthworms. All these things could have a toxic effect if there were too much of a constituent in the product. We found, in general, for every contaminant, one pathway is most limiting compared to all other pathways. And so if you improve the product or whatever, you can limit the risk for the most limiting pathway. You're protected for all. So for cadmium, it was garden foods. For lead and arsenic, soil ingestion, PCBs, it's cows eating the soil surface. Selenium and molybdenum is ruminant livestock eating forages on alkaline soils. Phytotoxicity for these. Nitrate, we all know, and phosphate, of course, is runoff to streams, which we've been talking about how to use gypsum to solve that. I said earlier that in the old days, there were some products. They were great liming agents, but they had so much arsenic and so much boron that they killed the plants when they were studied at high rates. Often they were studied at disposal rates as opposed to the kind of rates that Alan Torbert showed, which were added deliberately just to stop the phosphorus runoff. Or the stuff that Norton and Co. have shown, where you're just trying to improve infiltration. It's a few ton per hectare. So the old data, there were some bad products. The new material, post-fly ash removal with forced oxidation, has now been shown to be very, very low in contaminants. Here's the old days, the old coal combustion product days. This is Cost et al. I put in red elements that got up to levels that caused toxicity in the field. Here's arsenic. I mean, you can't apply materials without much arsenic. You're just not going to be allowed to. There was even some with high copper, which is hard to believe. But coals are highly variable, and so ash of coal, fly ash, is highly variable depending on the source. So by making it after fly ash removal, we now have FGD gypsum. And when you compare that with mined gypsum in the United States, you'll see only a few elements where it's higher in FGD gypsum than mined gypsum. But then we have to have the perspective of what is soil. We have found that when we compare trace elements in FGD gypsum with soils, I'm showing here the 95th percentile of the USGS database, that only selenium and mercury are really higher in hardly any of the gypsum, for FGD gypsum. Arsenic is higher than mined, but depending on whether it's an 8 or 12 number here, it's none are above or a few are above the background levels in soils. Selenium is higher. Is that a danger? Well, it's not, but the important thing is that gypsum is calcium sulfate, and sulfate inhibits selenite uptake by plants. If anything, we'll induce selenium deficiency, and there was a paper this week actually that showed that high gypsum applications reduced selenium in forage grasses in a test in Florida. So because of the natural processes of sulfate inhibiting selenium uptake, we can't get too much selenium in crops when we use gypsum, which has higher selenium than soils. When you're doing a risk assessment, unfortunately, it takes a lot longer than you ever dreamt it possibly could. We're supposed to be done last year. It's one of those kind of games. So the first data that EPA contractor did was inadequate detection limits. So we had to do analysis of the last years of runoff using improved methods, ICP-MS. We've been working with EPA, Tim Taylor, who's going to talk later, to bring the data together, to sort out transfers to livestock, transfer to plants, transfer to water, and so on, to do the risk assessment following the paradigms for 503 and also for spent foundry sand. When you look at the data, it's like Alan said, it's not higher than the background. It's pretty hard to say that there's a risk when it's not higher than the background. And I'm talking about elements that some toxicologists at EPA are sure is going to kill us all, things like arsenic, thallium, beryllium, vanadium. You can go on and on with the ums that they are sure are going to kill us all. But FGD gypsum is lower than soil and hasn't caused increased uptake in plants or runoff in the water that Alan reported about, pretty hard to say there's a risk. So I think we're going to find that it wasn't a risk in those elements. Mercury, there have been studies of mercury volatilization because transfer to the air and movement around the globe is the most sensitive pathway. The data show that adding FGD gypsum to the surface of several soils had marginal effect on mercury release, and it requires a bare soil to get very much mercury released. And, of course, gypsum will not interfere with normal crop covers and will actually aid. So earthworm studies have shown extremely small increment in earthworm mercury burden when gypsum was applied in two studies. So we'll be looking at that. I'm not sure. I don't think we're going to find it's a hazard, but we have to go through the whole process and suffer peer review before we'll have a statement that's available. Although most FGD gypsum is now low enough in arsenic that it's not higher than background soils, this is an increasing concern because of an event at EPA in 2010 where the drinking water people reanalyzed data from Taiwan and decided that arsenic was much more dangerous, 17 times more carcinogenic than it had previously been believed to be. And based on that, you're not allowed to touch soil. Absolutely prohibited. You may not touch soil. I'm not joking. That would be the only conclusion. Soil would have to be 0.025 ppm arsenic, or you wouldn't be allowed to touch it. Most of us know about soils in the world, and we know that that's a joke. How the hell can you even make a... How can you stand up and say something like that? But there are people who don't understand the real world. Well, the fact that rice grown in flooded soils accumulates rice makes arsenic a bigger social issue in the United States. There are also fish and shellfish, seaweeds. I mean, I don't eat a lot of seaweed, but I tell you not to eat any at all. Certainly the organic arsenic in manures used to be there, but they've disallowed using arsenic growth stimulators in poultry feeds. So we don't really have arsenic being used in agriculture. It's just the leftover arsenic. So except for rice, we don't really have anything that accumulates enough arsenic to make us work on it. Let me just skip past those. Because of that event in 2010, the EPA abandoned that standard because it was challenged by many parties, states, and industries, and so on. And they started the process to make a new cancer slope factor. And it's supposed to be done by the summer of 2016, or maybe 2017. I don't know what's going to happen. We know that they made a serious scientific error when they made the 17 times number. So with this interest in making a conservation practice standard with NRCS, where a number of parties are assisting them by providing data and discussing information that's available to help make their decision, we started in 2013, and until some decision is made, people will work together about it. In the end, two processes. This use will be affected by beneficial use designation of gypsum in states. I think with the data available, no state would have a basis to refuse to say that it can be maybe beneficially used. So then it becomes a matter of cost and economy. I've listed the trace elements and major elements, and I've made a suggested NRCS limit on what the maximum should be based on comparison with the U.S. soil 95th percentile of background and comparing that with this. So all of those elements, thallium, vanadium, beryllium, barium, on and on, you really can't hypothesize a risk. With these other elements, we know that if we applied too much zinc, copper, nickel, and acid soils, we could cause toxicity. But we can't do that with gypsum because it's not there because of removing the fly ash first. We're back down to mercury being a question that we've got to get scientifically settled. I'm suggesting a 2.5 because that would include nearly all of the new gypsum after fly ash removal. And otherwise, I think that this list is quite defensible, and I think it will help us all learn to use the benefits of gypsum. We'll be analyzing the data from those studies, and the data from the EPRI sponsor studies, Warren Dix Group, with EPA's contractor, and coming up with a final decision that I'm not sure I won't have already retired before they come up with a decision, but we'll work on it. And I think the data speak for themselves. I think you can all be pretty comfortable using gypsum made after fly ash removal with forced oxidation. Thank you.